Well, we encourage all our community gardens to take an organic approach to growing. We don't want to be in a position to demand that. We just provide some workshops and some learning opportunities for people to take that pathway, if you wish. Not all people do. Some community gardens actually do some spraying, which we're not very happy about. And we make them aware of the fact that what they might be doing damage to not only to the land, but also to personal health.
Yes.
But we do have some gardens that are... We have one Papatūānuku Marae garden in Mangere, which is affiliated with the Maori Organic Certification Scheme. And many of the other gardens follow an organic certification guideline in terms of actually application, so that's encouraging. And most people are not aligned anymore to, you know, the spray regime, the industrial model of horticulture, agriculture. You know, they want to be pure, they want to be fresh, and they want natural food to come out of the ground.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. In the studio this morning, I have Richard Main. And Richard, for the last 10 years, has been working for the Manukau Health Board in tandem with Diabetes for Health.
Diabetes Projects Trust. So the initiative is called Gardens for Health.
Okay, I'm glad for that. Excellent.
We got it right.
Yeah, we got it right. Gardens for Health initiative for the umbrella of the Diabetes Projects Trust.
Correct.
Okay. Richard, we've spoken three times. This is the third time, because what's happened in the Auckland area since you have come into the picture that 10 years ago is that 75 community gardens have been put in by you and your staff, but there's also another 25-odd gardens. Tell us about the magic of how you've got people to cooperate, work together, get the land, get a certain amount of funding. Can you quickly tell us about the start, and then we want to get into what the present picture is and your long-term vision?
It's certainly a labour of love for me personally and my team of two facilitators. We have worked very earnestly for the last 10 years to support communities who want to grow food and settings together. So that's been the key thing for us, and it's increasing all the time. There are issues and there are lots of successes,
yes.
Of course, but it's a delight to be doing what we're doing. It's very rewarding, and we're connecting with the huge diversity that is the Auckland population. The ethnic diversity of Auckland is engaging in this community garden action on a regular basis. A lot of fun. Has to be fun, otherwise, why would we want to be doing it?
I agree. Yeah, Richard, I think just being in a garden context and seeing the magic of soil, seeds, and then plants bursting through the surface, and then finally the so-called end product, healthy produce, healthy harvest, green or healthy yellow or healthy red or whatever, bursting from these plants.
And ultimately healthy people rise from the ground. So we are seeing what I use the catchphrase, sowing the seed for change within our communities. And our community gardens are now becoming hubs, just like libraries and museums. You know, they're that important, or becoming that important. But they need more support. Most of the network is run by volunteers. There are not many people in paid or paid positions. You know, funding is adequate at the moment, but if we want to grow, we need to secure more funding. We need more research done on what we're doing to support it. And we need more people to commit. So what we find is actually young mums, particularly with babies, young children, are the ones who are actually moving into this area, and they're actually conscious of good food, good kai for their children, and they're often the ones that are the instigators in making that move to a community garden involvement, engagement.
Yeah, that's interesting, having the young mums, because no doubt they will also most probably take a few seedlings back and have them on their back doorstep as well, solely to know that they can walk out and in 5 seconds pick something for the pot.
Well, our brief is not just to support community gardens. That we do with our small sort of support base and raft of the support package, but ultimately our goal is to encourage people to grow food in the home environment as well. We can't go home to home, door to door. We can support them in the community, but I think at the last count in January, we had 2,400 people growing food in community settings and 75 community settings. That's the network that we support here in Auckland. And we have around 650 people who are growing food in home gardens. They're doing both, which is really good.
Now, this initiative originally came out of the Manukau District Health Board. It was a governmental. There was someone up there who was visionary enough to say, we're going to run with this.
It was actually an initiative that came out of the Labor government at the time, back in about 1997, 98. And it was taken on board by Let's Beat Diabetes Initiative out of County's Manukau District Health Board. So I came on board at the beginning of 1999, so 10 years it is now. And we started this initiative, particularly in South Auckland, but we expanded through the three district health boards of Auckland with funding from Auckland Council, and also our primary funder has been the Ministry of Health, seeing this as a preventative measure to reduce the incidence of diabetes and obesity in our population by encouraging people to get active, to grow food, or to learn to grow food and take that to the table to nurture families and communities and neighbourhoods.
I interviewed Sue Kedgley when she was the head spokesperson on health for the Green Party in Parliament, but she was also the chair of the Parliamentary Health Committee. And what she did, she oversaw every aspect of health going through the government. And they've got a gigantic, I don't know, they've got $16 billion for 5 million people going out in health in New Zealand. And a lot of that money is to, like, the ambulance at the bottom of a cliff. And I told her, I said, look, I hear that there are so many people in their late 40s, 50s and 60s who are suffering from obesity, heart problems and diabetes, who are taking up hospital beds right across the country, and they're just lying in bed and they're taking so much out of the health system, we're going to crash it. And she said, yeah, I know. I said, you know? And she said, oh, yes. I said, well, does the government know? She said, oh, yes. I said, the health department know? She said, they certainly do. And I said, right, what are they going to do about it? And she said, nothing. They're not going to do anything about it. However, where you are at the moment, there is some people in the higher echelons of health who are wanting to encourage people to get the best food, the best kai into their body.
True. So we support the population that are afflicted with lifestyle diseases, but we're also keenly aware that we want to encourage people to avoid these lifestyle diseases by engaging in community garden or home gardening. So it's been a really interesting journey of 10 years so far, and we're confident that the future is bright. There are a lot of potentials for this initiative to grow, but we do have some constraints at this point in time.
Can you tell listeners of the potentials? We'll hear the good stuff first, and then some of the challenges that you meet, and I can understand land is a big one. But some of the real bright stories, because we are in need of hearing the positive aspects of community coming together and also just growing food, using your hands to make the soil produce food. It's a transmutation from minerals into some food that is tasty. We trust nutrient dense is organic, and if it's fruit in particular, it's sweet and juicy.
Well, I'd just like to start off, Tim, by just relating the experience this morning. Just I had a phone call. I phoned a lady over in Panmure, a Tongan lady, and I visited her and her husband's garden just a couple of weeks ago, and just a fabulous example of Pacific plantation farming at the back of the Housing New Zealand estate house. you know, taro, huge taro growing, and they're growing Tongan yams and cassava and a whole lot of other crops, just fabulous. And they were saying, well, Richard, you know, we were looking for another place. We need to grow. We have a population of 80 Tongans and Samoans as part of our network, including a church network. Can you help us with some space anywhere in South Auckland or East Auckland? And I said, well, I've got a couple of options. I'll explore those with you. But it's just an example of just a connection with a connection within our broad network of over 200 different entities that are connected with this Gardensfeld initiative. And so I'm on the march now to try and find a place where these people can grow food on quite a large scale. And that's one of the big issues in Auckland at the moment, is much of the green space has been gobbled up. Sometimes parks and reserves are not ideal because they have been formerly dumps, you know, and there's contamination under the surface, so that's often a big issue. So the only option there you've got is to build above the ground. But I'll just relate another experience, if I can, Tim, working with the Muslim community, and this is the New Zealand Ethnic Women's Trust in Mount Roskill. We have a small kitchen garden. So the ladies come down and they work the garden, and they're all dressed in their brilliant colours, you know, with the hijab on and so forth. And I've worked with this population for the last 5 or 6 years, and I have a great deal of respect for them, as they do for me. And, you know, I have their great understanding with them, and to the point where they feel comfortable with my presence. You know, being a male with a Muslim woman, there is a tendency to, or a need to have another male from their side with them. But they're happy with working alongside me, and we have a lot of fun in the garden. And my revelation is that they are incredibly vocal and free with their expression once you get to know them, you know.
Yes. So,
and that's only happens because they have confidence in you, and also because of the setting that we're providing. You know, the garden setting is a neutral one, and they feel comfortable. And the key thing is that, Tim, they're growing their cultural foods. So they're growing white maize, not to eat, but to pound to make bread. They're growing African gourds, which are traditionally a vessel which you use to carry water. And so that connection with back home in Somalia or Rwanda or Eritrea, they've come here as refugees. That connection back to the land is actually very powerful for them. And, you know, often enough, in the initial years they've been here in Auckland or somewhere in New Zealand, they haven't had that opportunity to grow food, but to grow their cultural food or to start to reconnect back to the land, it's a really important way for them to actually feel that they are New Zealanders, they are us.
You know? Yes, fascinating. And the fact that you can hang out. Now, do you sometimes work with them barefooted, or do you, because of regulations, have to wear boots? I often get barefoot, and we know that bacteria on the hands are very, very important for building our immune system, and also there's another energy that transpires.
Sure. I personally, in my home garden, I'll work my garden in bare feet, but in my home patch that a community garden in Royal Oak. But in terms of my role as a project manager and engaging in community gardens, we generally wear the appropriate footwear. We actually have a very strong code of conduct and safety guidelines, which we have actually generated and has been not necessarily endorsed by ACC, but we did put it to them about what we were doing, and they were very accepting of the brief that we put out. So we've shared that with a lot of our community gardens. So, yes, I do love to be barefoot and make that connection, because there is this spiritual connection, this energy that is radiating and circulating all the time. So the more you can actually connect, I know walking on grass is actually one of my favourites. You know, the whole essence of actually that energy that's coming up through the grass into your soles of your feet, right up through your body, is really powerful.
It is, I know.
It's just me personally, yes.
I'm the same, exactly the same. Mm. And particularly after dew in the morning as well, and the nice wet grass, just walking barefoot through, it's quite a lovely, lovely feeling. And we've just had some rain over the last week, and I was outside, and I could just feel around me. I talked to people, can you feel it? Can you feel it? The sun was beating down. There was a blue sky. The soil was nice and damp, and you could feel the energy, what you say.
So it's not only refreshing the soles of your feet, it's refreshing your mind.
Yep.
So your mind, body and soul as one.
Correct, yeah. Mm. Well, this is a holistic side of things, Richard, and I'd like you to maybe just talk a little bit about this, because our mayor recently used the word holistic, and my ears pricked up, and I'm naturally waiting for this holistic vibration to come down through the council and be embraced throughout all of Auckland. But holism and holistic ways of health also relate to just how we relate to the community and getting back again to the garden.
My sense is that we, on this planet, we have worked against nature for centuries. My sense is that we are more closely working with nature now. We need to go further. We need to work within nature. So that's what drives me, pretty much. And, you know, my experiences in the garden and working with the community on a daily basis, I have inspiration from not only people but also from the land, from Mother Nature and what it, the vibrations that are coming off the land. So I think, for me, this is my calling, in a sense. And if I may, Tim, I'll just relate a little experience back in the Unitech days. So
I was thinking that just then.
The Unitech garden is now, well, has for the last 10 years been a community garden. But before that, back in 1999, Brendan Hawari, as the designer, and myself as the sort of instigator, we initiated an organic garden called the Unitech Horticulture Sanctuary, a learning living laboratory for our students.
A sanctuary.
A sanctuary. So it still retains the word sanctuary. It's now called Sanctuary Mahi Whenua. And it's been saved from the developers late last year by Jacinda Ardern.
Oh, good.
Yes, but just going back to just over 11 years ago, on a particular day in autumn, I was working one of the rotation blocks and I unearthed some Maori adzes that came up out of the ground, and like they were, it was almost like I was meant to receive them. And it transpired that we had them identified, and some of them were greenstone, some of them were from stones from up in Northland, which were specifically cut to use as digging implements.
Like a coe?
Yes. So we had Kalmata assess them, and they said they gave them back to me and to Brendan to care for them, because given that we were the ones that had secured them from the soil. And then at that time they were building the marae at Unitech. And
a marae is a meeting house.
Yes. And in that marae they decided that the key greenstone digging implement would be embedded in the floor of the marae, up at the head of the marae. So there it is today for all to see. But just backtracking a little to that time when I found these implements, it was just over I think it was just push-hoeing, preparing some soil. Four or five of these pieces came forward for me to receive. Now, Tim, what actually happened was I was struck by an incredible vision in my head. I saw a Maori lady with a moko turning her head to look towards me, and with a smile on her face, as if to say it was timely for these pieces to be received by you and for you to be in a position to deliver or deal with them in whatever way you felt appropriate. So that was a bit of a blessing and quite a unique experience. So I have related that sort of spiritual experience, that connection with somebody who had been working on the land possibly some hundreds of years ago, because the Unitech land was from the mountain down, right down to the Miola Reef, out to the Waramata Harbour, was intensively cultivated. So that was a pretty unique experience.
Now, this is just wonderful. Ooh, it is all about connection and sensitivity, and you were in the right place at the right time. And the word komatua is a Māori elder who has a lot of wisdom. Yeah, so because you mentioned the name before, and often we get people from overseas listening to the program.
Yes.
So I'm just wanting to let them understand. Yeah, so Richard, this is it's embedded in you. The whole, you've been involved with growing and organics. And just how's organics coming along at the moment?
Well, we encourage all our community gardens to take an organic approach to growing. We don't want to be in a position to demand that. We just provide some workshops and some learning opportunities for people to take that pathway, if you wish. Not all people do. Some community gardens actually do some spraying, which we're not very happy about. And we make them aware of the fact that what they might be doing damage to not only to the land, but also to personal health.
Yes.
But we do have some gardens that are... We have one Papatūānuku Marae garden in Mangere, which is affiliated with the Maori Organic Certification Scheme. And many of the other gardens follow an organic certification guideline in terms of actually applications. That's encouraging. And most people are not aligned anymore to, you know, the spray regime, the industrial model of horticulture, agriculture. You know, they want to be pure, they want to be fresh, and they want natural food to come out of the ground.
I hear you, because I come from home. I drive into the city. I do have a tree planting regime to take in my ecological footprint into consideration. But when I come into the city, I realise that I'm having to eat factory food or industrial food, but often I'll bring my own food from home so that I don't have to go that path, because I want to have good, tasty sustenance. And so this is also a big challenge for people coming into cities. And I trust in days to come, you know, we do have farmers' markets in the cities, but that I'll be able to really source good quality kai food, and that'll be tasty and fulfil my needs for the day before I return home. But it's a dichotomy between factory farming and industrial farming and home gardening, or in this case community gardening, is quite large in many ways, isn't it?
We want to see community gardens become the norm again in Auckland. This is what we would wish for the future, but you know, in order to realise that goal, we probably need to grow. We need more people doing what we're doing, supporting people, training people. I think we ran 72 workshops and working bees in the six-month period from July last year to December, so we're pretty active out there. We scope the whole of Auckland. We've got gardens up as far as Silverdale, we've got them out as far as Ranui in the west, Howick in the east, and down to Tuakau in the south. So it's pretty dynamic, and we've got Tongan-specific gardens, we've got free-pick gardens, all different styles, different approaches to gardens. So some of them are community gardens, some of them are a mix of allotment and community gardens. There's a whole raft of different, what we term, models out there. So that's about what people want to do, what choices they want to make. Some are closed community gardens, some are open to the public. Some have volunteers in total actually managing them, others have people in part paid position. We say those that are actually generally have a part paid person employed, they actually will sustain, those gardens will be sustained more so than perhaps the voluntary base. The voluntary base can work, but ultimately people come and go, people move. And what we've found out in the last few years is because of the housing crisis in Auckland, there's a huge movement of people, particularly in South Auckland. A lot of South Auckland people are moving to Papakura or to Pukekohe, or even going down to live in Huntly because they can't afford to live in Auckland. They can't afford the rent in Otara and Mangere where they've lived for generations. So that's a big factor in terms of our participation. We're losing our participation base, because people are flying out, going further south, or they're moving in together. So instead of five people in a house, there's now 15 or whatever.
Yes,
so
I
these
hear
are
that.
These are some of the big issues that are having an impact on our community garden engagement.
Very much. Sue Kedgley in her interview also mentioned that hospitals used to have their own gardens. This is way back, you know, we may be talking 80 years ago, that they could source their own food for hospitals by having their own garden. Well, that's a smart move. And I even interviewed Janice Priest about 5 weeks ago, and she said that most of the hospitals throughout New Zealand are situated on land donated by the Māori people to the government, so that even the so-called tohunga could come in and help administer to improve the health of Māori people who are in hospital. So there's a lot of things that I'm only just learning about how the food is produced for hospitals. And, of course, we're talking health now, and I'm learning a lot, all I can say. And we need to find a place to grow more food, though.
We do have one garden operating at a hospital. It's North Shore Hospital, the Diabetes Service Centre. It's just a free pick garden. So there's about three or four garden beds, just quite tiny, quite small, just out the front of the entranceway. So all the diabetes clients who come in to have their eyes checked and assessments made, re-diabetes and obesity, have the opportunity to pick some chives or pick some coriander or something like that when they leave. So it's just one way of actually promoting healthy food, healthy kai, in a very small way. You know, it's obviously not supplying the hospital, but it's just promoting good health and all, an organic approach to growing food.
See, Auckland Prison, Parimarima, they've got gardens too, but it's a difficult one solely because they're not too sure if the inmates can be trusted, which is a great pity, because then they could grow their own food for the prison and they would have far healthier inmates that when they do leave, because there's a lot of documented evidence. If we are eating good quality food, our brain and our dendrites are going to have the molecules or the vitamins and minerals required for critical thinking. And I know that in a lot of depressed areas where people are not getting the best food, the children are starving their minds or their brains of sustenance as well.
I just relate to my experience working in South Auckland. Some of the schools in there, the children come to school with no footwear, limited clothing, and even in the middle of winter, they have breakfast programs and lunch programs for the kids in one school, particularly I won't name, but they support meals for about, I think, nearly two-thirds of the school. So, you know, what we term a high health deprived sort of population, and very difficult. But what we're doing there is we have a little small garden within the school. They have had a larger garden in the past, but they're, you know, encouraging the parents to see what can be done on a backyard garden scale within the school.
It's imperative. Yeah.
So this is really critical to change things, rather than, as we often see, populations go to the takeaway. They have their takeaways, all the fatty, sugary food, and then they wash it down with
Coke,
you know, whatever.
Well, trans fats are a huge problem. I mean, even now, a plate of fish and chips is a plate of free radicals. And so you can only have fish and chips as a treat, not as something you have three times a week. And I know that lots of kiddies don't or are unable to concentrate. They can't concentrate because the foods that they're eating, white flour products, are not sustaining them at all, or even regenerating their health. And so, again, getting these greens in, imperative.
One thing we do is we also, within the Diabetes Project Trust that overarches this initiative, we have dietitians and nutritionists. A good example was last week at the Balmoral Mundia Temple, in just local here, not far away from here.
Which temple, again?
The Bharatiya Mundia Temple in Balmoral Road.
Oh, it's a Hindu temple?
Yeah, the big white one,
yes,
with the white dome.
Yes.
We started a community garden there about 18 months ago at the back of the car park on land that the Mundia, the temple, own. And last week on Wednesday we ran a cooking class for about 60 elders, not just Indian actually, we had also Asian elders involved. And a lot of the product actually came from the garden that was used by our dietitians to prep. We had many of the elders preparing the food. This is in the kitchen beneath the temple. And then they got to eat and samples of that food, and they had a sumptuous lunch afterwards. So it was sort of really a great example of garden to plate. So I guess that's one of the strengths of the organisation I work for, is that we can cover from the growing right through to the eating.
Really, really important. I honour what you're doing, Richard. I've always had a... People don't know that I applied for the same job that you applied for, and you were the right man for it. I had to end up, and I'm still there, working at a holiday park, which does have its benefits, I might add.
Well, it's a pretty unique role, but it's not just one person. I have a team of two facilitators. One facilitator, Harry, he works in South Auckland. He covers all 30 community gardens in South Auckland. I have Homer, who's been with me since almost day one. That's not Simpson Homer, by the way. It's Homer Shue, his name is. And he supports community gardens in West Auckland and over the North Shore. My territory is pretty much Central Auckland and East Auckland, so that's how we share the load. But we could be doing much more, if we had greater resources. But, you know, we're happy where we are. We're happy with what we've done. I think our outreach is pretty substantial, but the demand is happening all the time. We've got an African garden out at near Kumu, where Rwandan and people from that part of Africa are actually gardening on some leased land, so we support just starting. That's a fairly new garden. We've come in to support them. We've got Riverside Community Garden, which is over on the eastern side of Otoho. That's another one, and as I mentioned, I've got this new proposal by this Tongan community and Pam Muir. They want to find land because they really want to do some gardening as well. So it's all happening, you know, and we managed to reach out and connect with these people, but we could do so much more if we perhaps had greater resources, including the human resource. But I guess we partner. Our strength is actually partnership. It's about partnership with all the range of different organisations. So often with one project, I might be working with five different entities. And that's a challenge. That is a challenge, doing that, but it's actually very rewarding, sharing all that effort, you know. So we might be working with the Red Cross 1 week. We might be working with Ecomatters Trust the next week on a project and so forth. So I think we can do what we currently do because of our connections, our relationships. It's all about building those relationships. And not just building them, but to keep working on those relationships, because those relationships need to be enhanced. And
yes.
And they fluctuate, yeah. And it's a bit like the recording studio here. You know, wavelengths go up and down. Because people's needs change. People come and go. So you're often working with a range of different people. And that's the case with Auckland. Working with our funder, one of our funders, Auckland Council. They, you know, have a huge change in the dynamics of the team that actually you're working with. So often the strong relationships you build, you have to start again and work with somebody new.
Yes.
But that's all good. It's all very interesting, and it's all about people, you know. It's all about people and food and what they want to do.
I'm speaking with Richard Main. He's the project manager for Diabetes Project Trust on Gardens for Health here in Auckland, putting in cooperative community gardens. And the website is dpt.org.nz, dpt.org.nz. Well, we all share the same breath, and that's a powerful, powerful statement, because if we didn't have breath, well, we know the story there. And so you've got all these different races and all these different cultures. The intent with everybody is to grow food and find ways in which to do it. And so you must find some very delightful people. Virtually everyone's delightful in a certain way.
I think, Tim, the thing that's in a community garden setting, people are
relaxed.
They feel relaxed. They feel it's a neutral environment. There's not often aggression or any extreme sort of views. People are there because they're on the same page. You know, they have the same belief. They have the same concern with the why they are there for. In fact, Tim, it's actually much more than just growing food. It is very much about the socialisation, the mental health well-being particularly, and so one way of actually enhancing the environment. Because we are sequestering carbon into the soil through our composting and through our growing of our trees, you know, orchards or whatever it might be. So there are multiple benefits for what we're doing over and above the core focus of growing good kai.
Yes, I mentioned to you, there's a Joni Mitchell song.
Yes.
And we've got to get back to the garden. And and there's many different people have sung that song. And just yesterday I was with a friend who's got banana palms growing in their garden. And she's got so much compost. And I walked in among the palms and the different trees where was a year ago it was nearly a blank slate. Mm. And now I just felt totally, I mean, really, I was in an oasis.
And it's full of oxygen. It's good, really good place for us to breathe.
That's true.
And feel better about ourselves and our community.
Yes, well, you mentioned mental health. I run into this policeman fairly regularly who walks the beat and does the beat in Queen Street. And I ask him, I said, well, how's it going? And he says, oh, it's tough. And I said, well, oh, what's the greatest challenge? And he said, mental health.
Mm.
And I thought, mental health in New Zealand? I can't work this one out. And he said, yes. And again, so what we've got to do is get people working and playing together, because when you do work in a garden, there's also a lot of camaraderie, there's lots of laughter, and there's joking, storytelling. It's a wonderful place.
We actually work with about 5-6 mental health providers, and I must say personally, if I'm involved with actually delivering a workshop with those people, I derive the most satisfaction actually seeing the delight on their faces, the smiles, the changes in their focus. And I've always been adamant that for those who do have mental health issues, the benefits of actually connecting with Papa Traduka, with Mother Earth, is actually very powerful, and it's very healing for those people.
Well, very much so, because Māori have that extra extension of whakapapa, and following their lineage from their mother's navel back to their grandmother, and then their great-grandmother and their great-great-grandmother, all the way back finally to their particular canoe or waka that came to these shores supposedly 800 years ago, and going back to the mystical place Hawaiki, and that obviously is embedded somewhere in Papatūānuku, Mother Earth. So they have that connection anyway that we Pākehā and white people don't seem to have, or we don't acknowledge it.
It's interesting, my roots are somewhat connected with the soil, with the land, because my forefathers came from Scotland in 1861 from a place called Kirkmichael, and they, particular gentleman, came to Otago to mine the gold fields. But he was a farmer in Scotland, and he started farming and growing seedlings and had a nursery in North Otago. So I've had a long history, a connection with my grandfather and my father, and I continue to have my hands deeply planted in the soil. It's good for your own personal health, but also I can share my experiences and my knowledge with other people. So that's what really keeps me ticking along, you know.
Yes. Now, you mentioned orchards too. There are areas on the boundaries or something to put trees in.
Yes, some larger sites have got the capacity to grow some fruit trees. Of course, Century Garden at Unitech has a food forest. That was one of the first initiated back in 1999 with our students there. There is another proposal on Grey Lynn that we're currently considering at the moment for quite a large-scale food forest orchard. That will probably take some time, but there's been some approval or some guidelines, positive comments from the council about that. So we see more of that happening. But we do need, you know, you need land. You need a good amount of land for that to happen.
How about the churches? Because there's a lot of the churches have land. Is there opportunity there?
I think there's always been opportunity, and some of them have some very good gardens in South Auckland. Some of the Pacific population, particularly the Tongans. The Tongans, I regard, I'm not having a negative view in terms of other Pacific populations, but the Tongans are very prominently active with community gardening. We've got two huge gardens, one in Papakura and one in West Pukekohe. If I just talk about quickly about the one in West Pukekohe, about 9 years ago, it was started off. It's on council land, actually. And you could look either north, south, east, west, and there'd be no housing to be seen on the horizon. Well, if I was to go out there today, in fact, my colleague is already, he's out there today on that site. And there's now about 500 houses within the boundary.
Okay.
So it's just being, the whole area is being swamped by housing development, property development.
Urban expansion.
So this is a big issue. You know, we are a green city. There's no doubt about that. But we've got to preserve our best soils, and some of our best soils are in Pukekohe.
Too right. Volcanic soil.
Volcanic silt clay loam soils are some of the best in the world for growing a wide range of crops. We're losing a lot of those soils. So every opportunity I get, I try and talk to people, particularly in council planning and the like, strategists and the like, to see what we can do. But it's a hard road because you're up against the developers.
That's it.
You're up against
big money.
Big dollars.
Yes, always, sadly. Yep.
But just going back to these two Tongan groups, you know, one group is about 180, including some churches and some rugby teams and rugby league teams all mucking in.
That's good.
And another group, actually, I just harvested their kumara on Saturday. And they're also on council land in Papakura. And they've got about 80 to 90 people in that garden. And we're not talking about just the adults. We're talking about children,
yes.
2-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 15-year-olds. We're talking about grannies and grandfathers. We're talking about 70 and 80-year-olds, everybody there. And when you go to their garden and they're harvesting or working the garden, they sing in the garden. They sing, and they sing their songs from their churches, and it's actually very inspirational. Quite a delight.
Yeah, that's right. Just the love of doing it. And they'd be doing it for God. They'd think they're back in the garden again.
Well, they think they're back in Tonga or Samoa, where they're on upon their plantations.
So, yes.
And they're growing their cultural crop, which is kumara and taro.
Now, the kumara, there's the orange kumara, and then there's the one that the purple on the inside, and then there's white on one of the white on the outside.
There's about 7 different varieties that we know that are cultivated here in Auckland, and the kumara shoots are generally available around October, November from various suppliers, and we helped that with that distribution to the wider community. And we also have Hawaiian kumara, so...
Is that the blue one?
That's more sort of like a white, but it has sort of purple streaks within it, inside it.
Oh, I see.
And then, of course, there's the local one, which is the... from Mount Albert. I can't recall the name of it now.
Because I was in Kauai, living in Kauai, and we used to have a blue kumara. Ooh, boy. It fascinated me, having blue on the plate.
So I think it's been a good season for kumara because it's been extended summer into autumn, plenty of sun, bit of moisture just in the last couple of weeks, so the harvest has been good. And the people, some of these people will be, because they planted late, they planted in, you know, late November, early December, they'll still be looking to harvest next month. So it's a very key time of the year, particularly for the Pacific population and their kumara harvest.
Is there a harvest celebration? Because in years gone by, once the harvest came in, it was a special occasion. I mean, even just farmers once upon a time bringing in the hay or ensilage, you'd have, because it was a cooperative, you know, farmers would come and help each other. Is there any particular harvest celebration that they have?
Well, actually, I missed the celebration on Saturday. I should have been there. But I'm so committed 5 days a week, I just have to have my own downtime. So this particular population of Papakura did invite me to the harvest, and they would have had a considerable celebration. They would have had dignitaries there. There would have been some speeches, and there would be some sharing of some of the crop. So some of the majority of the crop goes to the families, of course. In some cases, some of the crop in other locations will actually be sold at the farmer's market. And the third aspect of some of the focus in terms of a micro-enterprise is some of the product will actually be gifted to food banks or to needy families.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So, you know, people are very conscious about trying to generate some sort of return from the site. Because often all these gardens have some costs. They may be minimal, but they do have some costs. And if they can generate some income in terms of social enterprise or micro-enterprise model, that's actually increasingly happening now in Auckland.
Wonderful. Now, iwi land, Māori land, are there much in the way of plots around here? I mean, down country and up country there is Māori land, but no doubt the hunger for land over the last 150, 200 years has minimalised the Māori land to be able to do a deal with and use.
There's certainly some gardens around. Some have come and gone. Probably the most recognisable one and the most active is Papatūānuku Marae, which is on Centre Park in Mangere. And that's been quite a dynamic example of starting from a very small, fragile base. It's actually not on Māori land, it's actually on council land. However, the key two drivers there have made incredible progress, and they've, you know, I guess some of the difficulty with urban Māori has been to encourage their own people to come in to the garden or to come into to be involved with activities within the marae. But this has been a good example, and that garden is now... We often say that gardens sometimes are merely surviving. We're in a position sometimes to support them moving from survival mode to thrive mode. So that's been a critical one, you know. And we see the Papatūānuku Marae example as one that is now thriving for their whānau, for their community.
Yeah, wonderful, excellent. This is all real food for thought, Richard. Really, really good. Now, there was, I like blue sky thinking. What sort of vision would you like to see happen across New Zealand? Or let's start with Auckland first, because we as a human race have to come together. There's no two doubts about it. We have to, I still at heart believe in the great reconciliation of the human race, because any other options are too horrible to even think about. So we have to find, you know, ways to resolve conflict. We have to find a way to work together. And as the Māori say, we've got to get in the waka and paddle in the same direction at once.
Well, I think we're just going to grow food locally, and I term that locavore. We need to be locavores. And we need to be doing it organically or veganically, because the planet will support more of the population for longer, for better, if we have a more vegetarian, veganic approach to growing food. I'm not saying we eliminate meat altogether, but the statistics and the research does tell us that a more vegan or vegetarian approach to growing what our food needs is actually going to be more sustainable for the planet. It costs a lot less, you know, there's a lot less inputs. But I think, you know, just going back to being locavores, you know, we need... I think the Auckland model to perhaps be duplicated throughout the country. And we could have a national network of community gardens, and there currently is not a national network as such. There is some people who are trying to build that capacity, but I'd like to see it go national. Not necessarily, you know, the Gardens for Health model. It could be, but it could be something else. But I think that's the way to go, because... You see in large cities of the world, particularly London, you know, New York, or wherever it happens to be, Vancouver.
Los Angeles.
They have incredible networks that are integrated into the life force of the community, really. And, you know, they're well supported by the councils or the governments, or they get sponsorship, you know, significant sponsorship, that'll come. It'll come because the demand is coming from grassroots. It's coming up from the ground, you know. It's coming up from the community, from the neighbourhoods, from each household, and that's what people are demanding. So, you know, we always encourage the top-down support, but the grassroots, you know, rising from the ground is the powerful force that will be sustained, I think.
I'm definitely a grassroots person, and I got goosebumps when you started mentioning those other cities. Because when I first went to Los Angeles, I happened to go down to Santa Monica and towards Venice, and Venice is a profound place. And all I could see was big sweet corn and sunflowers. They got the sunflowers out. And this garden was for a couple of kilometres long, and people were just happy gardening. And they just walk out of their apartment across the road and start growing, and as you say, grassroots is it. Grassroots is actually how we're going to be able to reclaim our planet too.
But we also need those spaces, spaces to be places where people can come and just dwell and be either on their own or be together, because those places are healing spaces. You know, and urban life is fast and furious, and there's, you know, a lot of challenges for people living in, particularly in big cities like Auckland. The traffic is just one. It's pretty horrendous at times. But, you know, a community garden can be very tranquil, you know. It's not just about growing food. There's flowers in the garden. There's flowers for bees and pollinators and the like. And there's the centre plants in the garden. So it's a very uplifting environment. So it's much more, as I said, than just the growing of food.
Yeah, I agree. Going from Frankfurt Airport into Frankfurt, you see all these allotments behind all the houses, and they're quite large, and the Germans are right into it. And I've seen it up in Russia too, and I was in the Caucasus some years ago following up on the Ringing Cedar or Anastasia books, and boy, they're into it as well. And so New Zealanders, here's an opportunity. We were once very close to the land, and we've got more and more distant as we put air condition into our house and also put tinted windows on our buildings. We don't have that connection to the land. And as you say, Richard, if we're not out there in touch with the land and being a grassroots person, then this is something we have to get away from, or this is something we have to really get together on or get our act together on, because nature is where we spring from.
Sure. I was just going to say, for some years we've been trying to encourage vertical gardens in the CBD. Vertical gardens.
Vertical gardens.
So that's gardens in high rise. Now, I was in Tokyo about 3 years ago, and Tokyo has some awesome gardens that are up to 15 stories high. They're growing microgreens, they're growing all sorts of, they've got all sorts of food growing, not just in apartments, but within blocks you would think might be just car parks, but they're actually growing food in those. And that's an opportunity that I think Auckland could look at. But of course, the limiting factor is one of the engineering capacity of the buildings to hold that extra weight of soil and water, etc. So we do have some ornamental gardens in the CBD and on high-rise buildings, but very limited in terms of actually food production. So we have over 50,000 people living in the CBD of Auckland now. That's likely to grow. There's a lot of apartments.
Yes, yes.
And yes, a lot of those people will eat out in the cafes and bars and restaurants in the hotels, but there will also be a popular percentage of that population who want to grow food. So I think, you know, we're trying to encourage the council to look at those opportunities to build them into the plans of new buildings, new apartment blocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's so much you can grow, even in a small space. Even if it's just herbs for culinary and medicinal purposes, that's sometimes more than enough for some people.
Very true. So we need somebody in New Zealand to be the champion to have a network of community gardens over New Zealand. So that's what we're looking for?
We could do, yes. That's, I think, really important.
Yes. If Peter Blake was alive today, I'm sure he would be an honorary one. Or even dear Sir Edmund Hillary, had he been 40 years younger.
I'm sure there's people out there that would like to take up the challenge.
Very good, yeah. Well,
and support what we and others, many others, are doing.
Yeah, it is. And I thank you. Thank you, Richard. This is wonderful. And the website is dpt.org.nz.
Correct. Diabetes Project Trust, Gardens for Health Initiative. We also have a Facebook page, which you can check out us on the Diabetes Project Trust page.
Excellent. Oh, fantastic. Well, I feel really regenerated from that, and that's a good word to use as well.
Yeah.
Richard, thank you for taking time to leave the garden, to come into the city, into a studio, and share with our expanding audience.
It's a pleasure, as always, to be with you, Tim, and just encourage you to keep doing what you're doing. You're doing some really positive work for the community at large and for the country.
Thank
and
you.
And for your listeners.
Thank you, Richard. Cheers, brother.
Cheers. Thank you, Tim. Bye.
That was Richard Main, and yes, New Zealand can do it. We can, if we wish to, get involved at a local level. Just if you haven't got any land on your section or if you're in an apartment, go and talk to somebody who may have some and see what sort of deal you can do with them, because I know it's possible. I'm doing that at the moment myself. I live on a sort of a cliff and I'm unable really to put a garden together. I've got some friends just up the road, keen on organics, and I've got the use of land there now, and I have turned it into a wonderful garden, and I gladly share my food with them too. May I suggest you do a web search for Community Gardens New Zealand? You will find that EcoFind Discover Pure New Zealand will throw up a page based on Community Gardens. Check that out. It's really interesting. Community gardens are typically owned by a trust, organisation or local government and run as not-for-profit ventures. They are managed and maintained by the gardeners themselves and provide fresh produce and plants, as well as satisfying labour and a sense of community and connection to the environment. So as I said, do a web search and you'll find a good number of community gardens not mentioned here that are up and down the country where people have come together and decided to work and play and enjoy, grow, harvest, and have fantastic recipes to enjoy a harvest feast. At the end of the season, bearing in mind that you're still continuing to plant food and grow food all through the year, so you are sustainably regenerating food all the year round so that you can be healthy and happy. Check it out, because this is a way forward for those who may not have the land to grow themselves. Okay, kia ora. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send, and remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it. Spread it. Radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.7 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world. and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say Kia kaha and haere ra.
Our diversity. On air, online, on demand. With funding support through New Zealand On Air.
Of yesteryear. Join me, Albert Chan, Sunday nights from 7:10 for Vinyl Revival, right here on Planet FM. You can also listen online, planetaudio.org.nz/Vinyl Revival.
Beaches.
I love Biffles, taking the dog out for our nails.
Sparkling waters.
The harbour is absolutely amazing.
Green City.
I think, ha. Oh.